Welcome to the Student of the Game Fire Podcast with your host, Danny B. Today's guest is Dave Miller, 31 years of career experience, second generation firefighter, a battalion chief in the 4th Battalion on B shift for the city of Detroit. As a young child, Dave watched how his father treated and respected all aspects of the fire service. Unfortunately, due to the nature of the job, Dave's father passed. But during those times, he was also able to witness firsthand the true side of brotherhood of the fire service. Dave knew on the inside he wanted to become a Detroit firefighter. Dave's experiences with Detroit is truly one of a kind. One of his viewpoints is how firefighters should get out of their own bubble and experience training outside the confines of your own organization. If you know nothing about Detroit, I implore you to do your research and see what the men and women have been through and how they continue to persevere with pride day in and day out. With that, I present Dave Miller.
My name is Dave Miller. I'm a 31-year career firefighter, battalion chief in the city of Detroit. I got into the fire service after college. I had already applied to the fire service, but specifically Detroit. My father was a Detroit firefighter. He lost his life to cancer, occupational cancer, at age 49. I was a kid in high school at the time and really had no trajectory toward the fire service until I started to learn more about it, actually from his coworkers, that group of guys that we called our uncles, the firefighters that he worked with. I saw how they rallied around our family at that time, and it really changed my perception of the job, specifically in Detroit, and piqued my interest. And my dad said, you know, when he was sick, at home, an apparatus or a battalion chief would swing by almost every day, swing by the house and check on us, check on him, shoot the shit, whatever. It was comforting to him. It was comforting to us. One day I got home from school and the battalion chief was there and he had in his hand, applications for the fire department. And he went to hand them to me and my dad snatched it and tore it up. He said, "You haven't fucked up bad enough in your life yet." And it was tongue in cheek. He didn't, I know what he means now. Cause I never really knew him as an adult. But that was my intro to the fire service. So I guess you'd say the rest is history. It took a number of years, until I was actually hired, which kind of worked out. I was able to, you know, continue my education. So,
right. Okay. Okay. So the moment that, you know, they handed it to you and he ripped it up, how long did you wait, or did you kind of immediately knew like this is the path I'm going down?
Well, I knew it was a path I wanted to explore. I didn't know if necessarily it would come to fruition. Detroit's kind of funny. At the time we had, there was some political change going on in the city, excuse me. And, there was a hiring freeze in place actually. So there was a number of us, that received a notification to reapply, the same day we received a notification to report to the academy. So, I kind of saw that, waiting for that process to happen. I'm fairly organized, so I wanted to get my ducks in a row and had everything in place and kind of ready to go and then hurry up and wait years, at the time. And I wasn't the only one. So when it started, you know, when the opportunity came, it was a one shot opportunity. It's not something at the time. It wasn't something you could pass up and reapply or try again or push it off. It was the academy starting August 8th. Are you in or not? Cause we're going on to the next person. So.
Okay. All right. So can you tell us what the academy was like back when you first joined?
Yeah, I don't think it was a paramilitary academy. In a our training facility at the time was rather decrepit. It was showing its age significantly. We had a group of instructors, adjunct instructors from the field that were passionate about the fire service, passionate about tradition. And really wanted to, they were excited for us. So it made it fun and challenging at the same time. The that group that we started with, your classmates are forever your classmates, whether they stayed on the job, went into different positions on the fire department. There's a couple of us that are battalion chiefs together, and we get a laugh out of that. When we're at fires together, look at us now, kind of thing. But the academy was it was challenging. It was fun. It was an eye opener. I had an accident in the academy, a training accident, and ended up delayed getting out into the field with a significant leg injury that was probably preventable. But stuff happens, and that was kind of a learning. Learning big learning moment for me at that stage of my life. I had it was a bad week, let me tell you. I had the injury, I had my vehicle stolen. I was in the process of moving into an upper flat with a leg cast on. It was an interesting kind of time, and I kind of went from the fraternity house to the firehouse. So it was the summer of upside down for me. Like I say a lot, the rest is history. Here I am. So,
Okay. And how long was your recruit academy?
I think ours was 14 weeks. And then a couple of weeks of, at the time, we didn't have any, we had very little medical. EMS was very separate from fire in Detroit. There's no way that the two at the time could have meshed together with the volume of fires and the amount of work. It was two separate entities. So I think it was 14 weeks and then 2 weeks of EMS, kind of real basic stuff. So,
Okay.
and then a
And
year, full year probation.
gotcha. Full year probation. Okay. So upon completing recruit class, where was your first assignment?
Well, because as I mentioned, I was delayed leaving the academy because of the injury. I was held back almost in a holding pattern, kind of waiting. I'd finished everything, but the doctors cleared me. But there was some internal training that needed to be completed and documented, and I kind of waited for that for I think about 6 weeks, and I was frustrated being on a 9-to-5 in that position by myself. And there were a couple instructors that kind of took me under their wing and said, "While you're down here stuck, you're gonna, let's do something. You'll learn something." And I did, and I helped in that regard, but I wanted to be out in the field badly. So I had kind of reached out, to see when this was gonna happen. And our union vice president at the time, who he knew my dad, and they kind of they had ran together in the same battalion. He indicated to me, he said, "When you come out," he said, "I'm gonna put you at Engine 50 with Captain Demkowitz." He said, "You'll catch up real quick." And I got there and I caught up the first day. It was pretty crazy. So to go from I went from 0 to 100 overnight. Kind of that first day in the I went and introduced myself to the crew, and there were a bunch of veterans, a bunch of legends. And I was the kid. I think the next youngest guy in my firehouse on my shift at the time had 12 years on.
Okay.
So these were seasoned guys with just tons of fires under their belt, and a lot of experience and work, and knowledge. And they said, "Now the learning starts. when I got there. And the first day was Easter Sunday, and I think we had, I don't know, 7 or 8 solid fires. People trapped, vacant dwellings, occupied dwellings, domestic situations that turned into structure fires. I mean, I think it just kept coming, and it was all night. It was all day, it was all night. It was the indoctrination. So
Definitely. Okay.
and I you know I kind of went home from that shaking my head, and my senior man kind of patted me on the back. He said, "Yeah, this is every day. You got 30 years of it." And I walked out the door, and I just went home and sat in silence. Like, what the fuck did just happened? It wasn't for another couple of weeks that he pulled me aside. He says, "Hey, man, that was an unusual day."
All right. Before I have any more questions regarding your first day and the days after, for those that don't know, can you tell us a little bit about Detroit, the size, how many stations, personnel, things of that nature?
Oh, geez.
To the
Back
best
then,
to the best of your knowledge, yes.
yeah. So I mean, back then, we were, gosh, I don't remember the actual number of apparatus compared to now. It was like 68, and now we're at 46, something like that. I mean, it's a big city, geographically. There's a lot of, it was very spread out, and there's been discussions over the years about right sizing Detroit because it's so big and there's so much vacant. I mean, at the time in the 50s, it was one of the largest growing cities in the United States, one of the wealthiest, the heart of manufacturing and American business, with the autos and the assembly line and industrialization of the United States. It was built and born on that, from very fertile farmland to the greatness of industry. So the city blossomed, and then it shrunk. And as it shrunk, was kind of, I was in the middle of that shrink, I guess, or near the tail end, if you look back now, on the tail end of that shrink. So I think at one time there were 13 battalions, and now there are 9, eight actually, excuse me. So they were renumbered accordingly a few years ago. So I mean, it's no secret, Detroit experienced the largest municipal bankruptcy in history. And at the time, I was in the middle of my career. So it wasn't an option really to jump ship. It wasn't an option to leave. It wasn't an option to start over. So never before, in my opinion, where did you have a workforce that was at the mercy of a court, really? It wasn't, they called it a clawback or a plan of adjustment or agreement. It really was a sentence for a lot of retirees, a lot of workers. We were doing more with less continually. So we've now here 10 years out of bankruptcy. Those of us stayed are seeing kind of light at the end of the tunnel, if you will. The city's restructured. We've evolved, and the fire department's evolved. I probably more in the last 10 years than in history, which is good. There have been some changes that are not so good. So, I mean, that's a deep dive there too. So, and it's very subjective. So, I should probably add that I'm speaking only on my personal beliefs and not as a member of the fire department of the city of Detroit. These are my views only.
Okay. No, I get it. I get it. All
Yeah.
right. With that being said, what's your minimum staffing on like your engines and your ladders?
So, well, we fought and won for a 4-man ride, which we've been able to maintain, which is outstanding. There was a point when I was on the back end at Engine 50 where we were riding three, we'd ride three daily. Riding three was, looking back now, that was insanity in those days, but we did it. Three on the engine, three on the truck, but now it's mandated 4-man ride. So.
Okay. All right. And is it a requirement for all firefighters to be EMTs? Because I do believe you guys are on like medical calls.
Yes, so yeah, that morph that change we kind of morphed into a medical and combining EMS. This started during bankruptcy when I think the union's hands were tied and it was no longer something we could negotiate. It was kind of forced down on us. We had years prior voted to not merge. And we forewent a raise for that to not merge. At the time, fire runs were still incredibly busy. In our minds, it wasn't sustainable, and it wasn't something that was kind of properly mapped out. But that changed, and we morphed to a medical first responder plan, and then to EMTs. So the academy now is putting recruits through EMT, and those of us that chose to promote, we have a seniority-based promotion system still, thank God. That has requirements that the fire department helps us meet. So those of us that chose to promote, took the classes and went that route. So
Okay. Typically on a first due structural box, what is Detroit's first alarm assignment consist of?
Three engines, a truck, and a squad, an ambulance, a battalion chief, and a secondary chief, a safety officer.
Okay. All right.
And then at our discretion, we can increase or decrease the amount of apparatus based on what we have. So.
Gotcha. Okay. All right. So I'm gonna try kind of turn the tables a little bit. So your first ride, once you were released to go back on duty, you said was Engine 50. So my question to you is, did you feel any sort of pressure with your last name and who your father was when it came to the fire service?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I was kind of told by, man, I remember the chief of department at the time. He says, "Man, you got some big shoes to fill." So that, yeah, that it's always tough trying to walk in someone else's shoes, but it's also a hell of a way to know that person is to walk in their shoes, even if they're long gone. So. Yeah, there was some pressure there, and I think we should in the fire service hold ourselves to a higher standard. And I think respect for your family, respect for your profession, your career, what you choose to do, the fire service, you should automatically steer you to hold yourself to a higher standard. And it's the way you carry yourself, and considering your family name, and I'm not the only one. There's a lot of family tradition in the Detroit Fire Department. I mean, my firehouse alone, I think there was a day where, or there was a shift. There was a period of years where everyone on a shift had a father that had been on that apparatus. So, I mean, that's how much family tradition digs into it. So,
Right.
and it's funny now as a battalion chief, one of my lieutenants under me is one of my firefighters that we work side by side. And his father was one of my teachers, and my dad taught him. I
Okay.
mean, These are kids from the neighborhood. We grew up on the same street and went to the same schools, and now we're, kind of doing the same thing. And those guys, their father passed as well, 16 years to the day of mine. And we, I see them constantly, living and operating, as if to honor their father. So, which is, it certainly works, and it's certainly admirable to see other people doing that.
With that being said, with you going on engine 50, I'm assuming it wasn't hard for you to try to find those members you wanted to emulate, because every single fire department has those go-getters, but also every single fire department has, those slugs per se. So, did you seek out those members that were into the job, highly motivated, or was that pretty much like a non-negotiable if you come on engine 50?
there were a couple of there are a couple guys that, I mean, I'm still close with, and they've long been retired, but they kind of directed me a little bit and just said, you'll find your leaders. They're here. And they were right. You knew who to follow. It didn't take long. Yeah, there's some guys that did things a little differently, maybe weren't as into it, or they were preoccupied with other things. And you don't know what's going on in somebody else's mind, but it doesn't take long to see consistency, which I think is a good sign of leadership. You see the guys that are consistently doing before being told to, seeing something that needs to be done and just taking care of it, being the people that the officers and the chiefs can kind of lean on or bounce things off of. Obviously you want to be those guys. You want to be, or those guys or those women, that's that you want to emulate. You see how they operate, and and it's not always the most vocal person. Let me put that out there. It's not the screaming and yelling. It's not the, we use the word aggression wrong in the fire service. It's not the boisterous, aggressive necessarily, but it's a thinking person's job for sure. And you can kind of pick out the people that are thinking it through, and it makes a difference in the outcome.
You kind of mentioned it already. So aggression. Are certain are we using it wrong as a fire service?
Well, not necessarily. So, aggression is a negative term typically. He's aggressive, he's uncooperative, he is not willing, he's forceful. Well, against the fire itself, that's great, but ag aggression against your teammates, not so great. I think, aggression, the adjective is angry. You can get angry at the fire, and you need to be angry at the fire. But there's a way to channel that aggression, and again, get a better outcome, maybe by being assertive instead of aggressive. So we're assertive. You know what you want. You know what you need to do. You know your resources at hand, whether it's personnel, personalities, or equipment or tools, and that pivots all the time. And then you go and do the job assertively. Aggression can really get misunderstood, especially by young firefighters, or that maybe need to just kind of reel it in a little bit, do a little bit more watching, a little bit more shadowing, and kind of process things a little bit more. to channel their aggression into assertiveness and confidence. Confidence comes with assertive with that. You know, and you can lose your confidence any time along the way. It's not, listen, we're continually learning till the day we die. You know, you talk about finding your leaders, which super necessary in the fire service. Sometimes those leaders are behind you. You know, sometimes it's someone coming up behind you that has a way about them. They have personality traits that are meaningful in the fire service, and they have a level of intelligence that's a little different than others. Sometimes your leaders are coming up behind you, and it takes, I think it takes a mature person to recognize and identify that and utilize it. I mean, as a fire officer, now I'm going down a rabbit hole, but as a fire officer, you can utilize the skills of somebody coming up beneath you and kind of share that with your crew. It makes for a better outcome.
I love it. Love the explanation.
Hopefully I'm not going on a tangent.
No. You're good. Okay. With that being said, how long did you remain a backstep before you decided to start moving up that ladder to, I guess, if you want to say, start affecting change in a sense?
Yeah. Well, so there's a natural progression as you get some time on the job. And that was always a saying in Detroit. Like I mentioned, kind of reeling it in and stepping back and analyzing it. You'd have senior guys tell you, hey, get some time on a job. In other words, we got this. Watch us. Learn from us. You know, go scrub the floor while you're learning from us, type thing. Which is humbling and good. So I was essentially on the back end for 20 years.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
But as you know, and I was fortunate, I guess fortunate or unfortunate, the jury's out on that, that I never left. I never left Engine 50. I switched units once for 6 months and then went right back to my original spot. So basically I had the same schedule for 20 years. And that was a function of me coming on to onto the job at that time with all those senior guys. They all promoted out and I was the one left. So people came in behind me, next to me, under me, ahead of me in seniority that had different skill sets, different personalities. And you constantly kind of you kind of rebuild the crew to that, which is fine. It's the way it should, you know, it should go. But it was 20 years on the back end. And you know, as you start you know, you morph into that senior man position, but we're at a house that ran itself. Very little conflict. We were very good at, we're too busy to fight. So when there's, you know what I mean? Where mm-hmm. there was so much work to be done and it was so busy at the time. We'd have our little, you know, shift, this shift, is pissing on this shift and that kind of stuff. But what it all boiled down to was, it was too busy to fight. So, we worked well together. You really didn't need that senior man to lay down the law. We were able to agree on things, whether it was, you know, out of house details or cooking duties, which is a privilege and an honor, or should be in the fire service, you know, who's washing the chief's car or who's driving. And, you know, it just, we were able to, it was an easy place to be that senior man because you didn't have to lay it down too much. But so the way it progressed from there was into an acting position where you'd be an acting sergeant filling in for an officer in the battalion or the house, usually starting in the house and then off into the battalion or adjacent battalions. They try to keep it close in acting in the seat and then promoting. We have a sergeant position in Detroit, so promoting to sergeant at 21 years. So
okay, so it goes firefighter,
sergeant,
Sergeant, is there a driver's position or no?
The driver's position in Detroit is a little different. It's not in our standard traditional promotion line. So if you choose to drive and promote into driving, you go into a driver's route, which ends at fire engine operator. So you would have to leave the driving position back into the rotation to pursue an officer's position.
Okay. But somebody could stay in that position for their entirety of their career.
Absolutely. Yep.
Okay.
And we have some great engineers that have done that. They've made that choice and it worked for them, and it's a benefit to the company. There's some just outstanding fire engine operators in the city because it's all they ever did.
Okay.
And they do it incredibly well. So that's the promotional process, if you will, or progression. So at the time, they went sergeant to junior lieutenant spot, which usually was a swing to two companies, to a permanent lieutenant spot, which is they call the senior lieutenant spot. That spot was we got rid of that spot in a negotiation a number of years back. So I was actually the last senior lieutenant promoted. And then we had a new contract where junior and senior lieutenants were combined into one, just a lieutenant spot. So, and
Okay.
then captain from there to battalion chief, provided that you had the qualifications and tested and met the requirements and passed the test.
Okay.
And then it's seniority based. So.
Okay. You mentioned earlier the word tradition and how tradition is important to you. With you being in the fire service for nearly 3 decades, over a little over 3 decades. Do you see certain traditions fading? And I know you can only speak for Detroit, but you are fortunate where you do travel around the country. So are you seeing different traditions that are either good, bad, or indifferent, or what's your take on that?
Yeah, and sometimes traditions are just simple routines that and each fire department's different. Saturday steak day, Wednesday spaghetti day, you don't deviate that. We have breakfast on Sundays. Those kind of traditions, traditions in if it's your line. And you stretch the line and you put the fire out, you pack that line. That's one of those traditions that I see guys fighting to uphold, which I love to see. It's gratifying to see, somebody work so hard and then still want to clean up the mess after. Those kind of traditions, there have been traditions that went away, that it was good that it went away. So just the non-harmful traditions that lend to positive reinforcement, to the younger firefighters. So I see now, the way it's structured, we have a dual role program with EMS. So all of our new hires go automatically into an EMS fire position where they're switching apparatus after 12 hours, either an engine or a truck to a medic unit. So that's something we never experienced for those, 26, 27 of those years. I never experienced that. So I don't know how they feel. I see them wanting to hold on to some of the traditions that we held so true and valuable to us. So it's nice to see them wanting that. And I like to, if I can, kind of help keep those traditions alive with the new system that's in place. So we're not going to change the system. And they know what they signed up for, and they're doing a good job with it. The jury's out on the longevity of that. That's a tough life if you add overtime to the mix.
Gotcha. Okay. And do you know, and only answer if you want to, is the overtime kind of like if I was a newly Detroit firefighter, and is it mandated or can I have the option to choose to pick it up?
Typically, it's a choice, but it's a lucrative choice.
Okay.
So, let's face it, it's a tougher, it's tougher than ever to establish roots and buy a house and build credit and build a savings and save for retirement and all the things that you want to do, the extras, the fun stuff, the travel. You got to pay for it somehow. And myself, I left the firehouse nearly every day and went and swung a hammer for 20 years, because to pay those extra bills, we didn't have overtime back then. If you could grab overtime when it started, heck yeah, you'd grab it because it's lucrative, but you retired afterwards, So I often wonder how we did it, because we'd get together after a night of firefighting and we'd go build something or tear something down and go do it all over again.
Right. Okay. Speaking of which, I would probably get crucified if I didn't ask for listeners. What is Detroit's shift schedule?
So we're a four platoon, A, B, C, and D. So you're on a day 24, off a day 24, on a day 24, and then off for 5 days with no
Okay.
overtime.
Okay.
So it's an unusual schedule, not something we were used to. It works out. I think it was more implemented to accommodate the blending of EMS, but it now not taking overtime, you've got a 5 day break between two busy shifts. So, the day in between is lost anymore, I think, for most. There are opportunities for overtime in firefighting and EMS, which is good for the guys. But I also see them tiring out, and you need to have work-life balance, even if you love work. And I publicly said how much I love my job. Everyone saw that bit me in the ass,
I'm with firemen. I have no doubt.
right?
I have no doubt.
But I think the most profound, after saying that and having all these people hear that and see that, the most profound thing was somebody reached out and said, yeah, but the job's not going to love you back.
That's true.
And it really it that struck me and stayed with me to, I guess, help promote a work-life balance. And
Right.
I tell the young guys that, one of my mentors coming up, whose son and I ended up working together, he was a firefighter as well. He passed. Mike Lubig, his dad, Jerry, was an instructor at the academy, and I did not come on under him. He retired right before I came into the academy, but him and my dad were close friends, and our families were very close. We were neighbors, same parish, same schools. And he says, you're going to have, he we're talking about work-life balance when I wanted to come on the job. He said, you're going to have 800 drinking buddies and a handful of good friends. So just keep that in the back of your mind when you're going all in. And that's stuck with me. And his son, he passed tragically young on the job, was one of my friends, and we joked about that work-life balance until he was no longer there. No.
Right. No, and it's one of those things. It's important. It's also one of those things where you can easily miss what's truly important. Because, like, in order, like, there aren't many places like Detroit where when you go into work, hey, we are at least going to one job today, at least one. There are so many organizations that don't have that privilege. And so in order to get good, you know, with conferences and lectures, seminars, things you can actually go out and do, events, it's very easy to lose sight of what's important.
Oh, absolutely. You can you could spend the entire year going from conference to conference and never be home. Which is it's okay if that's your plan, but if you're not single, you're going to be.
Yeah, no, that's a fact.
And it's a disservice to your children if you have them. And your extended family. You need to have that balance. But you touched on a subject there, training, and there's a lot of it out there. And I frankly, I encourage guys to get involved in it. There's not for I guess as a percentage of the amount of Detroit firefighters, a very, very small percentage of them are in external training. Some work for some training companies. There's a couple guys that operate training businesses, but I mean, as a whole, there's not there's so much knowledge out there that these guys could bring to other departments. And I see it happening with a lot of training groups around the country, which I think is great. And I also think it's important to take a little bit of that with a grain of salt. Don't, this is not the Bible. This is an idea. It is an idea to what? To accomplish a result. So if it's fire attack that they're and again, we're not going to talk tactics, but if they're talking roof ops, if they're talking rescue, if they're talking tactics, it's great to absorb this information and disseminate it and see how it works in your organization.
Right.
And if it works in your organization, there's lots of stuff out there being taught. And I think it's important to be aware of that, not to dismiss it, but also not to hang your hat on it as the only way. Because there's we know and I know more than ever. I see this. So I'm on the outside now. Which is, this has been the strangest year, promoting into battalion chief. I'm on the outside of the fire looking in, and I'm seeing the end result, and I know what's going on in there. I also know it's safe and warm in there as opposed to outside. And I'm hoping that, and I know my officers are doing it. They're using those tactics, and if something doesn't work, they pivot and try something else. And that comes from experience and training.
All right. I do have a personal question of mine. So, you see social media, which is a good thing and a bad thing. Hopefully more good than bad, but when it comes to hose beds, you'll see like engines that are tight, very colorful, cross lays are neatly packed. And then, me being a fire nerd, a fire buff, I'll watch videos with Detroit, and you guys have what you call the Detroit bundle.
Right.
And one of my questions to you is, well, not really a question. One of my things that I have seen time and time and time again, when an engine pulls up, most of the time your firefighters are moving, maybe not moving like running on the fire ground, but you guys never get rattled. Everything is smooth, easy transition. And even though your bundle isn't like meticulously perfect, it still works for you guys. So my question to you is that a tradition through Detroit of how that bundle is packed and kind of like hanging off the back of the engine a little bit?
Absolutely. I mean, that's a tradition, and that's a Detroit thing. We could take it a step further. Different battalions, different companies would dictate the number of lines in that bundle. We always had a 3 and 4 attack line because it came off so much and we used it so much. It was in the absolute perfect spot for us. The way we do things, we bring the firefighters to the fire, dump the line, and the engine goes and does their thing. And that's because our engineers want to get out of the smoke, which is good. No, that's just the way we did it. It's always worked. We've talked about experimenting with different ways of packing the bundles and storing the bundles. And I never saw a hose bed cover in Detroit ever. We just don't have them. I think the apparatus, when they're purchased, come with them and they get stored away because it's kind of fruitless to use them.
Okay.
You know, in that scenario, I'm not saying they're a bad thing. Just, it wasn't something that Detroit did.
Right.
I mean, there were times when we would throw the line up as quickly as we could because you could see the next fire.
Gotcha.
Our ladder 23, our truck crew at engine 50 at the big house, their nickname was the House of the Rising Sun because, and they had a t-shirt with an image of the truck guys on the roof with axes, and you could see the next fire in the background. And that was not uncommon, especially, you know, breaking dawn type time, you know, right at dawn, to catch one after another. And literally, the race was on to load the line as quickly as possible, get it thrown up there, 'cause it's coming right back off. Or weather like we've had recently where the line is just all frozen. It's a big frozen mess. And you've got to go back and switch line in order to get back in service for the next fire. So,
right. Okay.
The volume of fires is not where it used to be, but this is how we learned it. And this is part of the tradition that's held. Mm-hmm. So,
okay. All right, cool. I got my answer. My question answered. So,
okay.
All right.
Good.
promoting to battalion chief. Was that something you ever thought? Nah. I'll move up through the ranks and remain on that truck. So my question to you is, what sparked that, you know, battalion chief question mark for you?
That's interesting that you asked that because it was a little over a year ago. I was as a captain. I struggled with that. And I actually, if it was the encouragement from some other chiefs that I was, firefighter with, who's, you know, I said, man, I'm in a good place. I'm comfortable. I'm happy. I don't know if I'm going to do it. And they're like, you're going to do it. And that, like, well, hey, no, you know, now I'm thinking about me. I'm not thinking about money. I'm not thinking about power. I'm not that guy. I'm not looking for the power of the chief's position so that I can, you know, penalize you or control you. It's just not my thing. So yeah, it was a struggle. I seriously thought about stopping a captain. Could have got my beloved engine 50 back and stuck it out there and kind of rode it out for the next 8 or 9 years. Mm-hmm. But it was the encouragement from some other chiefs that said, no, you got to do this. And I took that seriously and did it.
Okay. And with you being a battalion chief, how many stations are under each battalion's, I don't want to say command, but like overwatch?
So I've got, let's see, 7 companies in mine. That's okay. My house is a, the chief's quarters, there's an engine and a squad and well, the medic as well. So,
okay.
2 other double houses and a single house. So it's a big, busy battalion. So,
okay.
My battalion is, gosh, I don't know the exact mileage of the battalion. And, engine 30 is my standalone engine. That's the busiest engine right now in the city. So I don't have the exact numbers. We tomorrow I'll have the numbers, but the The metrics typically were usually the busy, we're always the busiest, numbers wise in the 4th Battalion because it's the largest battalion.
Okay.
So.
All right. And with that position, if anyone's looking, if any listeners are looking to promote to battalion chief, what is one sound advice you can give them for even accepting that role? Because it's an important role. Granted, you're no longer on the truck, and sometimes you're not considered one of the men and women anymore. But still, if you're gonna promote to battalion chief, what would be a good reason for individuals to do so, in your opinion?
A reason to do it is if you can impart some of your knowledge on a broader audience, and that's kind of why I was encouraged to do it. And it's not to get out of the fire. Like I said, it's safe and warm in the fire, especially when everybody knows what they're doing. I guess. The natural progression, yes, but if you can impart some of that knowledge on others, and if you can extract, you've got a bigger audience. You can extract more knowledge from from different people by having that full battalion. My fires at the battalion level, I intersect with three other battalions. So now, you really kind of see the synergy between the groups working together. And myself with the other chiefs working together toward that goal. So I guess that would be a solid reason to do it, and to take that on. And I would just say, I've told a couple of the guys that I came up with, hey, if you know, don't let me become that guy. And if you know, you know, don't let me become that, remember where you came from. Remember that you were the guy in the trenches. We all have bad days. And that doesn't make you a bad person. It doesn't make you a bad firefighter. You're having a rough day. Remember where you came from, I guess. So.
No, love it. All right. This next question kind of will coincide with the wellness and truly being there for one another topic. I was fortunate. I was able to take your class at the in Pittsburgh last year at the Jimmy Ellis event. And before you started your presentation, you had the numbers 8100 on there, and I'll never forget it because like that number stuck out to me like crazy. So 8100. I don't want to say it for you, but I want you to tell the guests what that number means and how it coincides with the wellness part portion.
That number, it was actually, it was brought to my attention that that was about the number of fires I'd been to. And when you don't think about it when you're doing it, but when other outsiders are looking in and see this, and it was brought to my attention, and you start to do the math, that's a lot of fires. So
That's
they
an
didn't know.
understatement.
It's a lot of fires. It's a lot of work. It's a lot of experience. It's also a lot of successes and failures. And that was another old traditional Detroit speak, was you're only as good as your last meal, and you're only as good as your last fire. Those two statements kept egos in check. Yeah, that kind of looking back on it, it was like that's a shit ton of fire. It's a lot of runs, it's a lot of responses. And I don't know, others have said, well, that was dumb. You got this paid the same to do a tenth of that work.
Right. And I hate that. I mean, okay, to me,
Okay.
that's it's perspective, to each their own.
100%.
You know what I
I agree.
mean?
Yep.
But like for me, I will never, ever get not even a quarter of that in my career.
Yeah, no, like I said, we took it for granted. We didn't, like I said, what my senior man said that first day, like, hey, get used to it. This is every day. Do, 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 Very matter of fact, and it was a little bit tongue in cheek, but you know, I talked to last summer I talked to a retired battalion chief who was one of those 12, 13-year guys when I came on the job. And you know, we live in the same neighborhood, and our, you know, our lives have been intertwined over the years. But he says, you know, sometimes all that work we did kind of makes you mad. You know, we cleared a lot of land. You know, and I see that. You know, we I'd like to think that we helped a lot of people along the way, and we helped train a lot of firefighters along the way. And we've had a lot of guest firefighters over the years, and we've had some that said, "You guys are fucking crazy," and left. And we also had some that spend their holidays year after year and their vacation time to come and shadow and learn from us, which is very, very humbling
Right,
that
right.
anybody would want to come and watch what you do and what you take for granted and what you've done and taken for granted all these years, to use their own time and resources to come and experience that, watch that, shadow that. So maybe there is something to it.
Right.
So I'd
Right.
like to
No.
think none of it was for naught. So,
No, I'm with you. I, like I said, I think it's all perspective, but
yep.
that, yeah, that in itself, you know, people from all over the country want to come watch what you men and women do for Detroit. Like it took to me, it's an honor, and you can pass down so many different levels of education, tips and tricks. Hey, this is why we do this. This is why we do that. And that way they can go back and maybe take bits and pieces to their organization to learn from, because ultimately the whole, to me, the whole point of the fire service is to learn from everybody's different perspectives and experiences.
Absolutely. And that kind of drives the future of the fire service and the way we do things. There might be an easier, more efficient way to do something. And a lot of times we're pretty hard-headed and won't do it that way because of tradition or whatnot. But when it comes down to the nitty-gritty, and over time you can reinforce that, it ultimately those ideas can be incorporated. You know, you have to be open-minded. It's not always that easy. You know, you talk about people wanting to come and see what we do. You know, a lot of people watch what everyone does on the internet. There's so much, everyone's got a camera out there. There are professionals with cameras, there are amateurs with cameras, there are people that have significant followings in the fire service. I see them at almost all my fires. And not all the fires go perfectly. Not everything goes really smooth. And you wait for the keyboard commandos to come out with their criticisms. You know, take it with a grain of salt. Again, you know, everybody's got their opinions. And you know, we'll respect that or look past them.
Right.
You know, it's a way to learn. Definitely, we learn by watching and repeating and doing. You know, we see, and what drives me nuts is the brand loyalists out there who, and I don't want to drop brand names, but if you're not riding an X rig with X pipe and X line wearing this SCBA, hey, guess what, guy? The fire goes out. I don't care what I'm riding. Yeah, I said this after bankruptcy. We had a beat up old fire engine. We had milk crates in the back that we sat on to get to the fire. I said, I'll take that apparatus back to have my pension back where it was and sit on that milk crate again. It doesn't matter. As long as you have an apparatus to get you there, something to pump water and something to spray the water out of, put your thumb over the end and put the fire out. I mean, really, if it we have to boil it back down to put the wet stuff on the red stuff when we're talking about firefighting. Again, I'm not going into tactics, but to have somebody, you know, put their dissertation on the internet about why this apparatus is no good because it's painted this color. It's check yourself. Yeah. That's I have to chuckle when I read some of that. So
yeah,
and there's also, you know, on the flip side of that, there's some really good observations that people make when they see those videos online, and they'll post a question or pose a question. I've had people reach out to me actually and say, "Hey, why did this happen at that fire that I saw on the internet?" And I kind of look back and I'm like, "Well, good observation. Here's what was happening," and I can tell them that, you know, or I could say, "You know what? Yeah, that was a mistake. Mistakes still happen, and we have to be, you know, we have to be careful with that." You know, it's not a, you know, the title is great, but it's not a game.
Yeah.
It's, you know, so.
Okay. All right.
That's that rabbit hole again.
No, you're fine. You're fine. I love it. Love it. The last topic for you, wellness and truly being there for one another. You know, Detroit has been through, with the history of Detroit, you know, you guys and gals have been through, you know, a lot. Sometimes some other organizations might not have to experience that. But one of the things that, like you said, some left, some packed up, went to different organizations, but the ones that stayed, I'm sure you all have formed a bond like no other.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and there's, you know, we used to joke and talk about at the height of it, silent firefighting. There would be no verbal communication because everyone knew their job. We did it so much, we did it so well, that we very, like you said, with the our Detroit bundles, we very matter-of-factly pulled the line off of the apparatus and went to work. Our truck crews went to work, our RIT teams went to work, our squads went to work. Our silent firefighting, we had that. And those of us that experienced that, we have that common bond that'll never go away. I recently had the opportunity to have lunch with my captain, who I spent my first days with, who pinned my badge on me, who's been retired for 20 years and is doing great and is healthy and living a really good retirement. And we talked about that at lunch. Yeah, we had it. We had the glory days. We had the best of times, and someone else's best of times is going to be different than ours, but we have that common bond. Mm-hmm. Just a couple days ago, I spoke with my lieutenant, who same thing. You know, I haven't talked to him in probably a year, and when we talked about it, you know, we started batting it around, and we just kind of nodded and chuckled, like we have that bond, and we had that, and nobody else can take, they can't take that away from us. You know, they took away a lot of stuff from us, but those experiences and those connections, they won't take away. You're absolutely right.
Okay.
But when, you know, when you talk about wellness, you know, it's gotta, we have to bring up what the job can do to you. And what we've seen it do, we've lost a lot of people, a lot of good people, that it's, you know, whether it was the job or outside forces or addiction problems or issues or other stressors in their lives, that we've, you know, that we've lost, and they've gotten away from us, and we couldn't help them, or it was too late, or it was too little. We need to kind of look out for each other a little bit more. It used to be kind of a, and this is not something anybody should be proud of, but there always used to be a thing in the fire, so toughen up, suck it up, you know, you can handle this. Hey, don't be a wimp. You see the people crying out or reaching out, even in a subtle way. We need to be able to recognize that, and we need to be able to act on that. We've had some near misses where people have reached out and got help, and thank God I had one recently, who he went public with his struggles and his journey to recovery, and with the help of the fire service. So there's help out there. And you know, mind and body, you got to take care of your body, obviously, to do this for 30 years. But you also have to take care of your mind. And you know, part of that is having outside interests outside of the fire service. If it's, and we, well, one of my senior guys used to joke, I'll fire all the time. The guys, it's all the stickers and the tattoos and the t-shirts, and it's all you do. And I can't go to this family wedding because there's a fire softball tournament or something that you can't miss. Guess what? You can miss it. There, you know, have those outside, so have friends outside of the job. Have, they're not going to understand what you do at work. So don't try to make them understand. But to have those outside forces and those outside relationships that aren't necessarily, you know, directly in the fire service. And I think that makes for that healthy balance. So, and you know, if you see someone, you see somebody struggling, some people can't be helped, and we like to help people, and we feel defeated if we don't help people. So you exhaust your efforts in helping someone, you've done all you can. And that's something to be proud of, that you did what you could. And the successes don't have to be spoken. You know, and if it's sometimes all it is and I have the opportunity to do this as a battalion chief, is a little bit of positive reinforcement. Like, hey, that was a good job. You guys did X, Y, and Z spot on, or I really like to see how you did that. But you can use positive reinforcement on the things that don't go well. I had a captain many years ago. I had a captain who was a man of few words. He didn't talk to people. He wasn't the friendliest guy, but he was a badass firefighter. And I made a tactical misstep at a fire, and he just said to me, "Well, you're not going to do that again, are you?" That was it. It wasn't, he didn't berate me. He didn't pull me aside. But 25 years later, that stuck in my head. And it was positive reinforcement the way he said it. It was, "Hey, huh? You know what? You're not going to do that again. And I won't. And I'll prevent somebody from doing that." You know, that misstep that I did. We're not perfect. No one's perfect. So I don't believe in necessarily punishment or being punitive, as getting a point across, at least not initially. If you can do it in a positive way, if we can make, you know, a messy, bad, not necessarily a bad fire, but not, things don't go perfectly. If we can talk it through, find the good, discuss what went wrong and what was bad and how it'll never happen again. You know, in the words of that captain, never gonna do that again, are you? That's all it takes. So,
Okay. All right. I always like to ask the guests, where would they like to see themselves, you know, and but before they decide to hang it up. And you've pretty much climbed the ranks. So you're all the way up to battalion chief. Not sure if you'd want to go higher, but the question still remains the same. Where would you like to see yourself, or even how long do you have before you decide, hey, it's my time?
Yeah, I don't know. You know, we have a mandatory age limit of 60 years old in Detroit, up to battalion chief. I don't think I'm interested in going past battalion chief. It's never, I think I can do more good in the field. I think I may be able to do more good in the private sector. I've also worked in the private sector for almost the last 9 years in the gear business, in the gear industry, which has been very rewarding. I don't know, man, I never thought I'd be here. So who knows what's next? I'm forever still learning. Maybe I'm going back to school. Maybe I'm sailing off into the sunset. I'd like to leave it a little better than I found it, and I hope I did. I think that should be our goal, in everything we do, whether it's interactions with people or, putting out structure fires.
All right. Love the answer. I always like to ask the guests. So that's
Yeah,
fine.
so
That's
that's a
fine.
good question.
One last thing. Is it a tradition of Detroit whenever you're a chief getting ready to go out, is it true that chief, if they go to a fire, well, it's not really not the word if, when they go to a fire, are they on the line to put that fire out as like a final hurrah?
That's an option.
Okay.
So there's actually a video out there. I'll share it with you. That was one of my first fires as a battalion chief, where in the video, and this is the one where the guy reached out to me and said, "What was going on there?" It was the photographer who reached out to me,
Okay.
because he saw a white helmet going into the fire with a tank on his back.
Right.
And that was Bart's last fire. His family followed him to the fire, from the fire. It was a hell of a nice send off. And he geared up and got the line. So
Awesome.
I was lucky enough, my last day as a lieutenant at Engine 50, I was lucky enough to have an extra sergeant on hand, and I geared up and was able to put the get the line on a fire that ironically was in the neighborhood I grew up in. I knew the house. It was on my paper route when I was a kid. And daytime fire pulled up and pulled the line and went and put the fire out. And my guys reluctantly handed the line to me. They didn't want to do it. And it was captured on camera by Bill Eisner, who is a legendary photographer who has passed away in 2024. He followed the Detroit Fire Department for about 60 years, I think. And he rode with us that day. So we have those kind of traditions and memories to cherish forever. That was a day that if I could replay it 100 times, I would.
It's fucking awesome.
Yeah.
All right. All right. Chief, I really appreciate you taking the time to do this, man. Like I said, as a nerd, as a lifelong learner, a buff, I love talking and listening to individuals and their experiences. And of course, I am a Burn fan. I've seen all of them. I actually own them. They're on the MacBook right now. So I just gotta say thank you for taking the time out of your day to do this. Spread the good word. Let others know it's truly okay to love the job, but we gotta find our limits. We gotta balance it out right.
Amen. That's a great wrap up. It's been my pleasure. It's always good to talk to you. It's certainly not like work. So,
Right, right.
I know that they call it work, but work's a four letter word. This is it's a pleasure when we're talking about progress and making a difference. So,
No, definitely.
you're definitely in the right place too. So, thank you for what you do.
I appreciate it. Thank you for the words. I appreciate you, Chief. Thanks.
All right.
If any of the listeners out there are or know of a great firefighter who embodies the principles of being a great communicator, goal-oriented, hardworking, humble, passionate, and professional, regardless of rank, career, or volunteer, contact me at studentofthegamefirepodcast@gmail.com. Until next time, stay focused, stay committed, and stay safe.